The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jim Cronin from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall be reading you from the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Let's start off with a little humor today. Laughter, the best medicine. Little Johnny and his friend Tommy were on their very first train ride. A vendor selling concessions came by, and Tommy's mother bought each child a candy bar. Johnny eagerly tore into his just as the train went into a tunnel. When the train emerged, Johnny saw that Tommy was still struggling with the wrapper. "I wouldn't eat that if I were you," Johnny said to Tommy. "Why not?" asked Tommy. "Because I took one bite and went blind for half a minute." I've created an app to help with insomnia. It lets you talk to other really boring people until you fall asleep. It's online sedating. Season to taste. Spices were first brought to Europe in the Middle Ages, and some of them are still at the back of my cupboard. And then there's two gentlemen standing on a street corner. This is a cartoon, so it's a drawing. And the guy's one looks at the other with a weird look on his face and says, "That's a tattoo? You're kidding? It looks just like a suit." I switched the label on all my wife's spices. I'm not in trouble yet, but the time is coming. That's T-H-Y-M-E. Yes, cumin. C-U-M-I-N. I start each day with a positive thought, like I can go back to bed in about 16 hours. A priest, a minister, and a rabbit walk into a blood bank. The rabbit says, "I think I might be a type O." I don't quite get that one. A wealthy businessman liked to show his party guest his pool and says, "If you swim a lap, I will give you $10 million, half of my estate, or my daughter's hand in marriage. But there's a shark in the pool." One day as he said this, there's a loud splash. A man swam the lap of the pool and got out just as the shark thudded into the wall. "So would you like $10 million?" "No," the man said. "Half of my estate?" "No," the man said. "Ah, you want to marry my daughter?" "No, I want the name of the man who pushed me in." Then there's a picture of what apparently is a library, and there's a cart, a book cart sitting there, and all the thing is it has all the books are lined up, and they all have red covers. Bibliophiles can be so clever. Before you dive into summer reading, watch out for booksellers and librarians pulling pranks. And the sign above all the books says, "I don't remember the title, but the cover was red." And then the mystery shelf, and I've seen this before on Facebook. All the books in the mystery shelf are in backwards, so all you see, the spines are against the walls. You can't read the titles. That is a mystery. My best pals contest. My divine bovine. And there's a picture of a gentleman. It looks like he's probably in his 40s or so, and he's being pushed. His head is being pushed against the head of a cow. Jenna sometimes hugs Phillips for 20 minutes. Jenna and her twin brother were born on a North Carolina dairy farm in 2018. Actually, this is Jenna the cow from Williamsburg, Virginia. Female calves with twin brothers are often infertile, so Jenna was set to be killed shortly after her birth. Fortunately, the dairy farmer's 16-year-old daughter convinced her dad to let her find a home for Jenna instead. When Jenna was just 3 days old, I drove from Williamsburg, Virginia to Durham, North Carolina in my Subaru to pick up the little calf. I'll be darned, it's from Durham. That's where I am. I named her after the wonderful Garm for her, who saved her life. Jenna was so sweet and tiny, curled up on a blanket in the car, and I was too nervous to stop during the ride home. Sure, she had a few accidents on the road, but nothing could dampen my spirits at having a chance to rescue this little girl. I fed Jenna 3 bottles a day for 6 months and spent many nights in the barn to make sure she never felt lonely. She loved to turkle and chase me at bottle time. When it ran empty, she would headbutt my stomach to try to get more milk out of me. I'm pretty sure she actually thinks I'm her mother. Jenna still loves to play headbutt, where we put our heads together and push. She usually lets me win. Occasionally, she shakes her horns and knocks them into my head. Feels bad as soon as she realizes she hurt me. She has so much fun pretending our strength is close to equal, even though she could easily throw me across the yard if she wanted to. But she is always ready to break for hugs. Hugs are one of her favorite things. She'll press her head into me and just hold the position for 20 minutes. If I don't come outside early enough to get her in the morning, Jenna will walk around the house from window to window and then stand on the back porch mooing for me to come out and play. She wants to be included in absolutely everything I do, whether it's working in the yard, often to fix something she knocked down, or eating in the kitchen, where she watches through the window. When Jenna was little, I would bring her in the house for carrots. She no longer fits through the door, so we feed her carrots through the kitchen window or our carrot drive-thru. I take her for walks around our city. Tourists always do a double take at the man strolling with a cow and a bright pink harness. Jenna loves to meet new people. She also gets to show off how she learned to shake hooves for alfalfa treats. She is so much like a puppy who weighs over 1,000 pounds. Mallory, my fiancé, actually lived across the country when she saw a video of Jenna and me on the animal rescue site. We began working together to rescue another calf, and Mallory soon came out to visit us in Virginia. She quickly won Jenna over. I proposed last August bringing Mallory into my life has earned Jenna the title of Wing Cow. And there's a picture of now a full-grown Jenna, the man squatting down in front of her with her head on his head, her chin on his head, and his fiance right next to him with what is obviously the other calf that they adopted. And that's a cute story. Doggone it. We found a fix. 5 tricks to improve your life. When life gives you lemons, do not waste them. If you need just a squeeze of lemon or a splash of lime to perfect your recipe or drink, don't slap up the whole fruit and store the unused wedges in the recesses of your fridge, only to be found weeks later all shriveled up. Keep the fruit whole and make small punctures in the skin with a fork or skewer. Then squeeze out what you need without drying the entire lemon or lime. Number 2, lighten a heavy plant pot. Having a giant planter around can do a number on your back, especially if you routinely move it in and out of the sunlight or rain, and you don't lift with your legs when you do. Next time you repot, fill the bottom with a layer of packing peanuts, making sure they're not the kind that disintegrate in water. Then cover the landscape fabric and cover with landscape fabric and lay the potting soil on top for a lighter load. Number 3. Here comes the sun saver. You have no choice but to park in the unforgiving sun with nary a shady spot nor covered garage to be seen. If so, once in park, turn the steering wheel so the top is upside down and free of the windshield's direct sunlight. When you head out later and straighten it out, you will be able to drive comfortably without oven mitts. Number 4. Save hundreds with an itemized bill. Since 80% of medical bills have errors, ask yours to be itemized. I've seen charges for tissues, a toothbrush, housekeeping, all things that should be included in the cost of the room, says Medical Bill Detectives President Beth Morgan. Once details are requested, billing departments can often off inflated charges. One Tylenol can cost $15 at the hospital. Number 5. Give pesky Sandy the brush off. One day at the shore is lovely, but bringing half the beach back to the house on your legs is not. Pack a jar of cornstarch among the shovels and boogie boards to sprinkle over legs and feet before getting out of the car. It soaks up all the moisture that sand clings to, just as baby powder does, but without the scent, making it easy to brush off. But sand isn't all that bad. We're going to flip to page 32 and read about the finer points, and we already did that before because that was only we read last week about gritty, nitty-nitty details on sand. I love how voice to text is always so a carrot. Autocorrect sticks in. Life Well Lived, a song in his heart. And a counter with a waiting room waitress songstress unlocks a side of my father I'd rarely seen before Alzheimer's. At a medical laboratory clinic in Waterloo, Ontario, an elderly woman sat on the edge of a waiting room chair, belting out the Celine Dion tune, My Heart Will Go On. Other than a slight rhythmic rocking of her torso to the Titanic theme song, she was motionless, with her arms crossed elegantly over her chest. With little effort, she was able to send her sweet, high-pitched voice exploding into every corner of the clinic. I had fun watching how people reacted. There was a lot of shifting in seats, but mainly they awkwardly averted their eyes and tried to pretend there was nothing out of the ordinary going on. I was there with my father, who was getting a routine blood test when the woman arrived. She settled in the street, directly across from my dad. Because she was so tiny, she was forced to perch on the edge of the chair so her feet could touch the floor. The position made it seem as though she were sitting forward to engage in conversation with him. She smiled at him, and he smiled back. I was concerned about how my dad would react to the possible encroachment of his space. He was 77 at the time and had been living with Alzheimer's for several years. He was a brilliant, introverted, card-carrying Catholic military man who was suckled and plumped on guilt, obligation, and humility. When he was healthy, he tolerated people's eccentricities dutifully, but with a healthy dose of silent reproach. He considered it wholly bad-mannered to bring undue attention to oneself. Since Alzheimer's has a tendency to play havoc with a person's patience and erode restraint, Dan had experienced a few challenging encounters in the past. I couldn't help but think that this melodic little woman was playing with fire. Her singing began gently like a quiet hum. I glanced over at Dad. His smile was gone and he was staring right at her. She was staring back. I couldn't read his expression, but it seemed to be something like confusion. This wasn't an unusual state for him, and I wondered whether he was actually seeing her at all, or if he was lost somewhere deep in his mind, not really aware of her presence at that point. Or maybe he was trying to establish this as someone he should know. This didn't deter the diminutive songstress one bit, and her singer slowly got louder. By the time she got to the chorus, near, far, wherever you are, it was a full-tilt belting. She was in a meditative, eyes-shut, torso-rocking, inner diva-embracing trance. Now Dad looked a little stunned. I tried not to laugh. The thought of my tightly wound, somewhat prudish dad being serenaded in a packed medical lab by this itty-bitty Celine Dion was just too delicious. Still, I watched for any signs of an impending irritated outburst. Instead, his face softened, and the tension eased in his brow. He no longer looked confused. People say that Alzheimer's is a thief, that it steals your loved ones slowly, day by day. There is so much heartbreaking truth in that statement. But certain experiences with my dad have allowed me to see a side of him that I never knew existed. I will hold on to those moments when he held my gaze and told me tender stories about when he was a child, or tells of his stint in the Air Force, as if he knew that he didn't have much time left to show me who he really was. In an unexpected way, that's what happened for me that day in the clinic. Alzheimer's sometimes seems to be peeling back the onion of my dad's true self. And while I hate to say that he struggled with the disease, I love the sweet man I've met. When her song ended and the waiting room became silent, the woman opened her eyes. My dad was still looking directly at her. "That was beautiful," he said. And she smiled and said, "Thank you." The Healthy. Wellness from thehealthy.com. The promise of intermittent fasting. A popular diet trend works well for many Weight Watchers, and the benefits might extend beyond your waistline. Like many people who put on extra weight, Jericho C. was surprised when it happened to him. A native New Yorker who loved walking around the city, he used to be able to eat whatever he wanted whenever he wanted, and stay pretty thin. But then, well, life happened. A move to California meant more driving and less walking. His advertising sales job required company dinners and later nights. Two kids have little time to think about healthy eating, and get-togethers with his extended Filipino family meant lots of big meals. "When you welcome anyone to your home, it's an automatic feast," he says. Suddenly, Jericho turned 40 and found 199 pounds on his 6-foot frame. "I had to do something different," he says. It was around that time that he came across a post on social media by a friend who dropped about 60 pounds. "How'd he do it?" Jericho asked. "If," said the friend. "If what?" Jericho responded. The answer was intermittent fasting. Fasting completely for discrete periods of time and eating most anything you want otherwise. That can mean fasting for parts of a day at a time, or 2 days a week. Jericho decided to try an 18-6 plan, which meant carving out a 6-hour window, say from noon until 6 p.m., when he could eat whatever he wanted and then go in the next 18 hours with absolutely no food, but at limited water, coffee, tea, and other non-caloric beverages. 2.5 years and 25 pounds later, give or take, a few thanks to the pandemic, Jericho hasn't looked back. "I like it a lot," he says. "It has made me realize that our appetite is more tied to seeing food than needing it. I do miss breakfast food, though. In fact, I regularly have breakfast for dinner." No one would say that intermittent fasting is easy, but it has many advantages. There's no counting calories, resisting snacks, cutting out food groups, or other challenges that come with restrictive dieting. Instead of focusing on what you eat as dieters do on paleo, no processed foods, grains, or sugar, Atkins, low carbs, Whole 30, no sugar, alcohol, grain, or dairy legumes, and other regimens, IF puts the emphasis on when you eat. Rather than saying just eat less, well, tell them not to eat after 6 p.m., says Elizabeth Poletti, RD, nutrition director for the Duke Diet and Fitness Center. For those who have the discipline, it works. No matter how long your fasting period, the metabolic impact on your body is similar. Typically, when we eat, our bodies break down carbohydrates from food and turn them into a form of sugar known as glucose, one of the body's preferred fuels. Unused glucose is stored for later in your liver, So if you're eating three meals a day, your body always has energy on hand as well as a reserve it can tap. But when you're fasting, your body doesn't have a steady stream of food to turn into energy. This means it has to tap its reserve. After about 8 hours, it depletes the stored glucose and needs a source of energy. This is when the body begins burning fat for fuel, explains Mark P. Mattson, Ph.D., adjunct professor of neuroscience at Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine in Baltimore. This, combined with the fact that you are likely taking in fewer calories during the shorter eating window, is going to help get rid of excess weight. If those were the only benefits of IF, it would look worth a look for many people. But since the dieting fad has become more widespread in recent years, studies have discovered that its benefits can extend far beyond what you see on your scale. Research in Nutrition Journal revealed that IF reduces artery-blocking LDA cholesterol as well as triglycerol, which causes hardening and or thickening of the arteries. Both arterial conditions are major factors in heart disease. A 2019 study in the New England Journal of Medicine reported that IF might ward off neurological diseases such as Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and Huntington's. The theory: the plaques that clog neurons in the brain feed on glucose. Not surprisingly, glucose reduction also benefits people with diabetes. A study in 2018 JAMA Network showed that the 5-2 diet, limiting calories to 500-600 per day for 2 days and eating regularly for 5 days, results in weight loss and improved blood sugar control for people with type 2 diabetes. These facts may promote autophagy, a deep cellular cleanup that allows your body to purge old, damaged cells and replace them with new ones. All that said, intermittent fasting isn't a miracle. As with any strict diet regimen, you can consult your doctor and carefully weigh the benefits against the potential side effects. People with diabetes, heart disease, or gout should know that the lack of food triggers steep dips in blood sugar. All types of fasting can cause headaches, fainting, weakness, and dehydration, says Kahan, M.D., the director of the National Center for Weight and Wellness in Washington, D.C. IF could backfire, leading to increased appetite and binge eating, as well as a slower metabolism. And going without food is a recipe for being angry. You may feel irritable on fast days, says Christopher Otte, Ph.D., professor of nutrition at the University of Illinois. What's more, a randomized controlled trial published in a 2020 issue of the Journal of American Medical Association found that most of the fasters lost weight was lean muscle, not fat. Lastly, if you are under high levels of stress or in intense athletic training, consider steering clear of the IF, especially avoiding extreme 36-12 fasting, which calls for 12 hours of unlimited eating followed by 36 hours of zero calories. When you do any type of fast, part of the benefit comes from mildly trusting your body. Just like when you lift weights, you damage the muscle to make it stronger, says Robert Futon, R.D., an integrative medicine dietitian in New York City and spokesperson for the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics. With fasting, you are stressing out the body, but it gets stronger in response, and if you stick to the program, it can get thinner, too. Compression stocks to help circulation. Thanks to my genes, I have varicose veins and chronic swelling in my ankles. I also have restless leg syndrome, ROS, and before I turned 50, I got up to pee 2 or 3 times a night. I decided to research natural remedies and read that compression stocks addressed most of my issues. Ugly or not, I had to try them. I ordered Graduate compression stockings. The compression is strongest at the ankle and gets lighter as you go up the leg. The first day, I wore them for a few hours and noticed my legs didn't ache as much, even though I decided not to sleep in the socks. That night, I got up only once to use the bathroom. I've worn the socks most days since with the same results. The socks give my poor circulation a boost in the right direction, away from my ankles and back up to my heart, increasing blood flow to all my vital organs. The stockings can also help prevent blood clots. If you're considering trying them on your own, stick with compression measurement of 15 to 20 milligrams. Consult your doctor before trying socks for serious condition that might require greater compression. The coronavirus diabetes connection. Early on in the COVID-19 pandemic, Dawkins recognized that while people with diabetes were no more likely to get the disease than the general population, they were more likely to become sicker. It turns out that a relationship between COVID-19 and diabetes goes two ways. Some people had no history of diabetes, were showing up with full-blown diabetes at the time they were experiencing severe COVID-19, said Francisco Rubino, MD, Chair of Metabolic and Bariatric Surgery at King's College in London, who co-authored a letter about the issue, the New England Journal of Medicine. Among people who were hospitalized with severe COVID-19, newly diagnosed diabetes appeared in 14.4% of the cases, according to a study published in Diabetes, Obesity, and Metabolism. The mechanism for the link is not clear yet, but it may have something to do with the virus's triggering autoimmune response, as well as its effect on specific proteins that are involved in sugar metabolism. Dr. Rubino urges people who have had COVID-19 to be vigilant about symptoms associated with diabetes, frequent urination, increased hunger and thirst, and fatigue. If these symptoms persist after the virus has abated, patients might want to have their blood sugar level checked. And let's roll over to the Consumer Reports and talk about the new normal. As COVID-19 vaccination rates continue to rise across the U.S., and I hope all of you have gotten your vaccine, more of us can do things we love with a high degree of safety. The local rules may vary. Here's when you can confidently go without a mask, take a vacation, dine out, and more. And there's a picture of people doing all kinds of things here, eating in a restaurant, going to a baseball game, riding bicycles, riding on buses and airplanes. Americans who spent the past year or longer yearning to get back to their usual activities are now getting the chance with COVID-19 infection rates trending down in many places in the U.S. Restaurants, gyms, hotels, and other venues are reopening. In May, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention announced that people who are fully vaccinated against the virus, coronavirus, meaning at least 2 weeks past their final shot, can go unmasked and without social distancing in most situations with little risk. The vaccines don't guarantee you won't contract the virus, but research suggests that they provide near total protection against severe COVID-19. Even if cases are occurring, they're now increasingly being decoupled from hospitalizations and deaths, says infectious disease specialist Amesh Ajayala, MD, a senior scholar at Johns Hopkins University Center for Health and Security in Baltimore, and Infectious Disease Society of America, IDSA, press briefing. But plenty of people are not vaccinated, including younger children who are not yet eligible. And while there's a strong evidence that the few fully vaccinated people who do pick up the virus are unlikely to pass it on, more dangerous variants may continue to emerge. For these reasons, it's important to continue taking some precautions to protect ourselves and others, notably older adults like me, people with chronic medical issues like me, and immunocompromised, and those who can't be vaccinated, says James Dickerson, Ph.D., Consumer Reports Chief Scientific Officer. After all, you can't distinguish fully vaccinated people who don't wear a mask from unvaccinated people who don't wear a mask, he says. In this end, the IDSA urges local officials to consider their area's transmission and vaccination rates when setting policies. Though many masking and distancing requirements have been relaxed, some federal, state, and local laws, as well as individual businesses' policies, may still call for these measures. So the new normal could look different, depending on where you are. It's also likely to continue changing all the time. On the following pages, medical experts cover the safest strategies for vaccinated and unvaccinated people. We're not fully back to normal yet, but we're well on the way. Following this expert advice could help us get there faster. Planes, trains, and automobiles. Travelers in the U.S. began dusting off their suitcases in April when the CDC announced that fully vaccinated people can travel safely within the country. There's ample interest. And a Consumer Reports nationally representative survey of 2,288 Americans conducted in April, 22% said vacation was the social activity they missed most before full vaccination or the most eagerly anticipated activity afterward. The federal government still requires everyone 2 and older to wear a mask on planes, trains, and other public transportation. As of mid-May, destinations such as Hawaii and Chicago were asking that all visitors or those from certain states present a negative COVID-19 test. For unvaccinated domestic travelers, the CDC advises getting a COVID-19 test 1 to 3 days before travel and 3 to 5 days after, and self-quarantine for 7 days after returning home. The agency also recommends that all travelers have a COVID-19 test 3 to 5 days after returning from a foreign country, and most airline passengers must have a negative test results no more than 3 days before traveling back to the U.S. or proof of COVID-19 recovery within the prior 3 months. Rules and CDC's guidance change often, so be sure you check the recent updates. Should you or shouldn't you? For anyone who's fully vaccinated, the risk of being on an aircraft, train, or bus, or other mode of public transportation is low to very low, says infectious disease specialist W. Dave Hardy, MD, an adjunct clinical professor at the Keck School of Medicine at USC in Los Angeles. For unvaccinated travelers, he said, the risk is at least medium, because of the close seating arrangements and the fact that other unvaccinated passengers don't always wear their masks correctly. Driving, of all the modes of travel, the most secure is in the cocoon environment of an automobile, says William Schaefer, M.D., a professor of infectious diseases at Vanderbilt University Medical Center in Nashville. The risk in a taxi or another for-hire vehicle is low for vaccinated and unvaccinated people if occupants are masked, passengers sit in the back, and windows are at least partially open so fresh air can freely circulate, says infectious disease specialist Pravina Kular, Farm MD, IDSA spokesperson. Smart steps. Even if you're fully vaccinated, remove your mask only for eating and drinking, bleefree, and only if others are masked. Other passengers are basically at the end of your nose, Hardy says. If they sneeze or cough while you have your mask off to eat, that's where an exposure could occur. Restrooms pose no heightened risk if you stay masked and wash your hands carefully. Be clear on cancellation and change policies. Airlines are reinstating some penalties waived earlier in the pandemic. If you bought the least costly tickets after certain dates on American, Delta, or United, for instance, you can no longer change or cancel them free of charge. Amtrak has waived change fees for reservations made by September 6, 2021, but cancellation penalties may apply. Many travel insurance policies now cover cancellations due to COVID-19 illness, says Megan Walk, product manager at Insure My Trip, a comparison website. But standard coverage will not cover cancellations due to fear of COVID-19 or of border closings. The cancel for any reason protection in some policies has no exclusions, but has eligibility requirements, can be pricey, and typically reverses only 50 to 75% of the cost. Note that rental cars may be scarce and expensive, so book ahead and check prices at off-airport locations. They might charge lower rates and have fewer fees. Hotel and home rentals. If a hotel stay is in your future, it's a good idea to confirm that cleaning and ventilation measures to minimize COVID-19 transmissions are in place. Hotels have a high rate of individuals traveling from all parts of the world, so disinfecting is important to prevent even the remote chance of COVID-19 infection from services, says Kular at the IDSA. Barring local and state rules, many chains no longer require fully vaccinated guests to wear masks in indoor public areas, such as elevators. Should you or shouldn't you? More than half of Americans in CR survey, 60%, say they'd be comfortable at a hotel where other guests might be unvaccinated. And experts say staying in a hotel room or home rental is a fairly safe bet for both vaccinated and unvaccinated travelers, as long as the room has been properly cleaned and it has been 3 or 4 hours since the previous inhabitants were in the room. I would consider that low risk, says Hardy at USC, adding that those hours should allow any floating viral particles to dissipate. Smart steps. Even if you're fully vaccinated, some experts like Kular advise that you continue to wear a mask and practice physical distancing in all public areas. She also recommends that you try to dine outdoors at least 6 feet from other tables when at a hotel. When booking, remember that the liberal cancellation policies of earlier in the pandemic may have been lifted, that prepaid reservations might be ineligible for refunds under any circumstance, and that policies for hotels and home rental platforms, such as Airbnb, may vary from property to property. Restaurants and bars. After a year of closure, takeout, creative outdoor seating setups at limited indoor capacity, restaurants and bars are taking steps to return to normalcy, and people are eager for it. 78% of Americans in CR's April survey said that they plan to eat indoors at a restaurant at least once every other week after the pandemic is declared over. At this point, the rules on how many people are permitted inside restaurants and bars vary widely by community, but you're likely to see plenty of anti-COVID-19 measures for a while, such as enhanced ventilation and mask requirements while you're not eating or drinking. That's because evidence has shown that in-person dining contributed to early COVID-19 spread, thanks in part to the close proximity of diners to each other and their tendency to linger at the table. Go or not, international travels and cruises. At press time, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention advised that Peter put off international travel until fully vaccinated. I've traveled internationally and think it's probably okay as long as you take precautions and have been fully vaccinated, says infectious disease specialist Maria L. Alkiade, M.D. Infectious disease expert Ravina Kular, Ph.D., has a somewhat different view. I would not recommend international travel until we see a consistent decrease in cases. As for cruises from the U.S. ports, the CDC projects that some could resume as early as mid-July, what they are, and they actually, I think the first one goes next week. However, cruise lines will first need to meet several conditions such as conducting test sailings or attesting that 98% of crew members and 95% of passengers are fully vaccinated. Will it be safe? If a cruise liner is requiring all passengers and crew to be fully vaccinated and test negative for COVID-19 before boarding, you're in a bubble, and the risk would be low, Kular says. But shore excursions could hike the risk, so for now, it best be wait a while to cruise. Should you or shouldn't you? Whether you're vaccinated or not, having a meal or drink outdoors with your household can be low risk because the fresh air helps dissipate any coronavirus particles, especially if tables are spaced well apart and servers wear masks. But according to the CDC, the risk rises for unvaccinated folks who eat outside with unvaccinated people from different households. So if you haven't gotten your shots yet, you may want to stick to fresh air dining only with your household, pod, or fully vaccinated friends. Also, be wary of setups that mimic the indoors. Just being on a street doesn't mean you're outside. If there are walls and ceilings and doors, says Melissa Hawkins, Ph.D., professor in the Department of Health Studies at American University in Washington, D.C. When it comes to indoor dining and drinking, the overall risk is low if you're fully vaccinated, according to Monica Gandhi, M.D., an infectious disease physician at the University of California, San Francisco. Even in louder or more crowded situations, such as a bar or club with live music, but if you're not vaccinated, indoor dining remains high risk. Smart steps. If possible, make reservations to avoid potentially crowded waiting areas and to ensure that you get a table if capacity limits are in place. If you're unvaccinated, except for using the restroom where you want to wear a mask, stick to your party rather than moving about the dining or bar area. Parties and celebrations. Many weddings, reunions, and other celebratory gatherings postponed in 2020 and early 2021 are now planned for this summer and fall. If you're hosting or considering attending one, check rules and regulations ahead of time because they vary from place to place. For instance, in New Jersey, where private catered wedding venues were prohibited from opening dance floors until recently, guests can now boogie if you're masked and socially distanced. And believe me, if you've ever been and lived in New Jersey, wedding venues are a huge business there. I mean, there are lots and lots of them, and they're huge and very popular. Should you or shouldn't you? At indoor and outdoor events where everyone is fully vaccinated, masks and staying 6 feet apart are now unnecessary, according to the CDC. Want to get your nails or hair done beforehand? The CDC says these are low-risk activities for fully vaccinated folks, even without masks. If you and some other guests are unvaccinated, the risk is at least medium. So if you go to such a gathering, wear a mask and practice social distancing. And note that risk climbs as the event size and number of households rise, especially if attendees come from different states, says Amanda Castell, M.D., a professor in the Department of Epidemiology at the George Washington University Milken Institute of Public Health in Washington, D.C. Smart steps. Unvaccinated? Find out whether the host or asking guest about their vaccination status and requesting that they be tested shortly before the event. This may help make a potentially iffy situation somewhat safer, Castell says, along with masking and social distancing. Hosts may want to consider that plenty of vaccinated people are still wary about gathering in large groups inside without masks. If it's possible, have it outside, says Hawkins at American University, to take the burden off making a hard decision off the guests. Oh, and are you wondering whether it's really okay to hug someone when you see them in a celebration? 17% of Americans in CR survey said they missed this most before full vaccination or were looking forward to it most afterwards. As long as you and the Huggies are fully vaccinated, hug away. Movies, museums, and theaters. In CR surveys, 42% of Americans said they plan to see a movie on the big screen at least once every 2 weeks after the pandemic is over. And yes, I have been to the movies. So they'll be glad to know more and more theaters are reopening, many with safety measures in place. The Cinema Safe program for the National Association of Theater Owners encourages theaters to not only limit the number of people, there may be local restrictions too, but also improve ventilation and eliminate communal condiment stations, so no self-serve popcorn butter. Regal Cinemas and Cinemark, for instance, say that they're using their heating and ventilating and air conditioning systems to bring in more fresh air, and the seats around those that are reserved will be kept empty. Should you or shouldn't you? As of mid-May, indoor events such as movie and theater performances and visits to uncrowded museum were among the activities the CDC considers low risk for vaccinated people. But communities or businesses may require masks. If you're not yet vaccinated, indoor theaters could be iffy. So Hawkins recommends outdoor options such as drive-in movies and concerts and theater performance in a park, particularly those where masks are required and a reasonable distancing measures are in place. Museum going may be the only medium risk activity for unvaccinated people wearing masks. Many institutions have timed and ticketed entry, reduced capacity, and mask requirements. Some movie theaters rent screening rooms for small private events. If you want to see a film on the big screen, but are concerned about being surrounded by people whose vaccination status is unknown to you, this may be an option, Hawkins says. Invite 9 or 10 people. The fully vaccinated don't have to mask up or socially distance in small indoor gatherings of vaccinated and unvaccinated friends and family, per CDC's guidelines. To split the cost, and you're likely to come close to a typical ticket price. Otherwise, Cinemark recommends buying tickets at limited capacity theaters in advance to make sure you get what you want. Live music and sports. A number of these venues are open but may limit guests and ask for documentation of vaccination or recent negative COVID-19 test. Or like the San Francisco Giants, they might have separate sections for the fully vaccinated and the unvaccinated. Should you or shouldn't you? Sports games and concert, along with movie and plays, were among events that 15% of Americans in CR's survey said they missed most before vaccination or were looking forward to most afterwards. For those itching to get back into the stands, the CD says the big outdoor events are low risk for vaccinated people without masks. For the unvaccinated, big crowded events pose risk, but even a large event can be reasonably safe if it's outdoors, with limited numbers of people with masking and distances, says Preeti Milani, MD, Chief Health Officer and Professor of Medicine and Infectious Diseases at the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor. Smart steps. To avoid crowding at concessions, see whether mobile ordering is available. Try flagging down concession sellers in the stands or eat ahead of time. If you're unvaccinated and want to give the band a woohoo or join in a chant at an outdoor concert or sports game, go ahead as long as you're masked, as Lindsay Moore, Ph.D., Professor of Simple and Environmental Engineering at Virginia Tech University in Blacksburg, who studies airborne virus transmission. Cheering and chanting expel viral particles more than normal breathing and talking, which makes sense. Essential items. Your son will take a long kit. Whether you're doing a nearby activity or taking a trip, the following item may come in handy. Masks. Many places still require them. If you're going on an overnight or multi-day trip, be sure to pack enough to wear a fresh one each day. Hand sanitizer. Cleaning your hands often as well is critical for preventing all kinds of infections. Soap and running water are best, but hand sanitizer will also do the job. Vaccine card. Have a photo of both sides of your COVID-19 vaccination card on hand in case you need it for entry to a venue. Medical info. If someone in your group starts feeling ill, you may need to contact their doctor to seek help. To be sure everyone has their insurance card, doctor's contact info, and a list of their current medications. In fact, a copy of regular prescriptions is a good idea for travel. First aid kit. It's wise to have one in your car or travel bag. Make sure your kit includes a thermometer and fever-reducing medications. What if you're vaccinated and they're not? How safe is it to socialize with friends and family members who aren't yet vaccinated against COVID-19? If you're fully vaccinated and others aren't, smaller and larger outdoor visits are generally considered okay. And the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says fully vaccinated folks don't need to wear a mask or socially distance at a small indoor gathering of fully vaccinated and unvaccinated people from multiple households. Unvaccinated attendees, however, should mask up and distance from others both indoors and outdoors to reduce their likelihoods of infection, says CR's James Dickerson, Ph.D. This is especially important for anyone at higher risk of severe COVID-19. How about younger children who might not be eligible for the COVID-19 vaccine? Unless they have an underlying condition, kids do not typically develop severe COVID, so it's okay for them to go to gatherings, as long as all of the adults have been vaccinated, says infectious disease expert Maria Alcadate, M.D. It's best if these get-togethers are held outdoors, however, she said. Beaches and parks. Fun facts. Great Smoky Mountains National Park in North Carolina, yay, and Tennessee had its second busiest year on record in 2020, despite being closed for 46 days because of the pandemic. Outdoor activities such as hiking, camping, and swimming have provided vital outlets for fun and relaxation in natural settings since the pandemic hit, and the same should hold true this summer, according to Marr, especially now that we know how uncommon it is for the coronavirus to spread in fresh air. Still, social distancing and other safety measures are in place at many of these popular summertime destinations. The 423 national parks in the U.S., for instance, have unvaccinated visitors wear masks inside buildings and even outside when keeping distance from others isn't possible, such as during a photo op at a crowded overlook. They're also instituted timed and ticketed entry to certain attractions. Some swimming areas limit the number of visitors and have guests stay at least 6 feet apart. That's a bit longer than a pool noodle. Should you or shouldn't you? Experts give a thumbs up whether you're vaccinated or not. If you're unvaccinated, however, the swimming site, park, or campground should allow for some separation of visitors and require masking. In indoor areas, such as changing rooms, with such measures, they are among the lowest risk places to spend time this summer. In fact, the wind at the beach blowing off a lake or an ocean may make it safer than some other spots, says Schaefer at Vandenhoek, because it helps diffuse virus particles in the air. Even outdoor community pools, hot tubs, and water parks are pretty low risk when operated properly, the CDC says. The chlorine used to disinfect them should kill the coronavirus and other germs. Smart steps. Find out ahead of time what rules are in place and where you're headed. You may need to take your own food and drinks if the concessions are closed, or you might need to make reservations as with some of the national parks. If you're unvaccinated, leave your mask on the towel during swims. A wet face covering might not work as well, and it does make it harder to breathe. The gym. Exercise often means heavy breathing, which can contribute to the buildup of viral particles in the air, putting gyms in the higher risk category during the pandemic. But many fitness centers have taken creative steps to protect exercises, such as using large areas like basketball courts to space out stationary bikes. The CrossFit chain has instructed its gyms to install carbon dioxide monitors and ensure that the CO2 stays below a certain level, a sign that the space is well ventilated with outside air. Should you or shouldn't you? The CDC says indoor gym workouts, even high-intensity group classes, are pretty safe for the fully vaccinated. But it may still be wise to mask up at the gym because heavy breathing could help viral aerosols spread, says C.R. Dickerson. For the unvaccinated, an indoor gym is a risky prospect, particularly in a group setting. Smart steps. If you're unvaccinated, it's best to exercise outdoors for now. Ask whether your gym offers classes outside or look for a class that meets in a park. You'll need a mask for either. Workouts are also available on video or on demand. Consider an indoor workout before full vaccination only if the facility requires masks, limits the number of patrons, and has plenty of spaces around equipment, and skip group classes. It's best to stick to lower intensity activities, too. Also, suits out the ventilation. While open windows and doors certainly help, Marr suggests asking what HVAC filters the gym uses and how often the facility's air is completely replaced. Good signs are the use of a MERV, M-E-R-V, 11 or higher filter, and air that's replaced at least every 10 minutes, he says. For everyone in the gym, it's a good practice to wipe down any equipment you use, for politeness if nothing else. Surfaces aren't a significant driver of COVID-19 spread. Take your own water bottle because water fountains might not be open. Plan on showering at home for the same reason. A low score, how to fix your credit score. A low score undermines your ability to buy a house, go to college, or start a business. It also can affect your insurance rates. But how the scores are determined is often hidden and doesn't treat all consumers equally. Here's what to watch for and what to do. 9 years ago, Brittany Williams' credit score was 569, put her in the very poor category and undermining her dream of buying a home. But over the course of 2 years and with the help of her credit union, Williams of West Memphis, Arkansas, raised her score by 100 points and qualified for a mortgage. When she began her journey, Williams, 32, was among estimated 14% of active credit consumers, with credit scores so low it is hard to qualify for a mortgage. According to Experian, one of the big three credit bureaus, about 27 million adults lack any credit history or have no score at all, according to the most recent figures from Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, a government agency. Millions of Americans are locked out of American dream of home ownership, higher education, starting a business, or making major purchases, says Syed Elhaj, financial policy analyst for Consumer Reports. For most lenders, everything begins and ends with that score. Introduced in the 1950s, credit scores were intended to objectively measure creditworthiness based on your history of borrowing and paying back loans. Two companies, FICO and VantageScore, created the scoring models which apply formulas to information in your credit reports, and for three major credit reporting agencies, Experian, TransUnion, and Equifax, that track your past financial behavior. The higher the score, the more likely you're to receive lower interest rates for a credit card, mortgage, or a car loan. But not everything in your financial life counts towards your score. For example, paying rent on time often won't help, but paying a mortgage on time will. The system also doesn't care whether late payments stem from things out of your control, say an illness or your own irresponsibility, and it will punish you for years for a slip-up. Moreover, because it rewards people who already have a credit history and makes it hard for those who don't to establish credit, it creates a circular problem that limits option for many. That's particularly true for blacks and Hispanics, who have substantially lower credit scores on average than whites, says Chi-Chi Wu, staff attorney at the National Consumer Law Center, a nonprofit that works for consumer justice and economic security. For example, a 2019 analysis from the Urban Institute, a nonprofit research organization, found that more than 50% of white people had a FICO score greater than 700, while just 21% of black people did. Having a weak credit record can hurt your chances for getting a job, because employers often check your credit report, Wu says, and because landlords and insurers often check credit reports. A poor score can prevent you from renting an apartment, or mean you'll pay more for car insurance, she says. Credit scores also suffer from a lack of transparency. Some consumer advocates say, we all have many credit scores, each calculated differently, and it's hard to know which score a given lender uses, though knowing could help us build that score. Worse, consumers can't directly dispute a credit score, though the credit report data behind scores often have errors. Around a third of the almost 6,000 volunteers for a recent CR study found mistakes in their credit report. For Williams, building credit had a lasting impact. Several years after buying her house and finding her financial footing, she opened a home health care business that she now says employs 60 people and serves more than 100 homebound seniors. I am blessed to be able to do this work and get the help I did, Williams says. Here are some ways credit scores can undermine your financial future and 11 tips for fixing them. Lack of credit history equals a low score. It's a credit catch-22. You need to build credit. To build credit, you need credit. Bill Hardikoff, a senior industry analyst at CardRate, says, a company that evaluates credit card offers. This can be a challenge in communities of color, and particularly, he says, the Urban Institute found that 30% of black people versus 18% of white people didn't have enough information in their credit reports to generate a score. One way to build a history is to open a checking or savings account. But that can be easier said than done. A 2020 Morgan Stanley report on inequality in home ownership found that there is a greater commercial branch scarcity in communities with diverse populations. Minimum deposit rules and high checking fees can be other deterrents. Be aware that even if you have a credit history, it becomes stale if you don't continue to use credit regularly. That's because some of the scoring algorithms treat recent use of credit as a positive factor in calculating your score, Hardikoff says. In some instances, credit card users can close inactive accounts, and your credit score can take a hit. How to build credit fast. Open a bank account, then take out a really small loan and make monthly payments. That's how William fixed her credit. She took out several small loans from a credit builder loan program that doesn't require a credit score offered at Hope Credit Union, which serves economically distressed communities in the South. Williams paid back the loans, dramatically improving her credit score. You may be able to get a loan more easily at a credit union than a bank, says Felicia Lyles, the senior vice president at Hope. That's because credit unions are nonprofits owned by their members and often offer better terms. Credit unions may also let you use your paycheck to secure the loan to build a payment history, for instance. Fix number two, apply for secured credit card. This is a type of credit card that you've backed with cash deposit. That means you put it in because your credit limit. The amount you put in becomes your credit limit. Using the card and paying it off over time will start to build your history and improve your score, Hardikoff says. Check that the bank or credit union backing the card reports your payment activity to all three credit bureaus. Learn the terms and conditions, and do not sign up for a card advertised in grocery or other stores. Those cards carry big fees. Fix number three. Ask a family member or trusted friend with good credit to add you as a user on their credit card. The debt paid off on the card will show up on your credit report and help your score, Hardikoff says. But make this if only with people you trust and have an existing financial relationship with, because if they miss or are late with a payment, it can ding your score as well as theirs. Fix number four. Opt in to Experience Boost free of charge to get a one-time utility sale and even Netflix payment counted towards your credit score. Get your rent counted to by signing up along with your landlord for a service like RentTrack or Pay Your Rent. For a fee, these programs link your bank account with your credit report to capture non-traditional types of bill paying. Thayer indicates that a consumer who has credit invisible or has a thin credit file is able to manage credit responsibly, says Francis Creighton, president and CEO of the Consumer Data Industry Association, the trade group that represents credit bureaus. Go to Experian.com to sign up for Experian Boost. Although the program might increase your score by just a few points, Artikoff said, that could be enough to move your ratings from fair to good. The high cost of low credit scores. 740 to 799 is a very good score. 580 to 669 is a fair score. Here's how much more interest you'd pay on a credit card, a 5-year auto loan, and a 30-year mortgage if you have a low or high credit card. If you have a credit card, total interest charge would be $3,102, based on an average balance of $3,668. For the lower rate, it'd be $6,000, so mostly twice as much. For an auto loan, you'd pay $3,625 interest on the very good score, $7,471 on the fair score, 100% more. And on a mortgage, $219,660 on a 30-year mortgage of $253,000 and $261.76 on the average on the fair score. That's a difference of 19%. So many scores. Equifax, TransUnion, and Experian make money by selling scores based on models developed by FICO and VantageScore to banks, insurers, and credit card companies, even employers and marketing firms. That's why you have not one but many credit scores, each designed to assess risk for these various businesses. For example, when you apply for your mortgage, your lender most likely uses FICO 2, 4, or 5. But many consumers are surprised to learn that those mortgage scores tend to be lower than other credit scores, says C.R. Zelajas. That's because mortgage FICO scores weigh on-time payments more heavily than FICO 8 or similar scores, which are used by auto lenders and credit card companies. I'm sorry, we skipped a section here. That was kind of an extra insert. Fix number 5 for managing multiple scores. If you're seeking a loan, ask the lender which Vantage or FICO score it uses. Then find out how you perform on that score. Go to myfico.com, that's F-I-C-O, for your FICO score, or go to a third party such as the American Express or NerdWallet for your Vantage score. You may have to pay to see the scores. $29.95 for FICO's advanced subscription plan would let you see scores from all three bureaus. If you can learn the main factors that score considers, you may be able to boost it, Hartikoff says. For example, you could pay down credit card debt to improve your debt-to-credit ratio, which is likely to improve some scores. Check your credit report and dispute any errors you find. Obtain your credit report free of charge at annualcreditreport.com and read it carefully. All credit scores can benefit from having incorrect negative items removed, Dijas says. In CR's recent study of the 34% of volunteers who found errors, 11% said they were related to debt they didn't know or had already paid off, or to payments inaccurately reported as late or missed. Dispute errors in writing by sending a certified letter with supporting evidence to each of the big three credit bureaus. They have about 30 days to respond. Pay down credit card debt so that if you use no more than 30% of your available credit. All credit scores respond to some good habits, and lenders like to see that you have available credit but aren't using much of it, says Bruce McCleary, a senior vice president for the National Foundation for Credit Counseling, an organization that helps consumers improve their financial profile. Reducing debt load will almost always help scores. Small slip-ups cause big problems. Debts 30 days past due or more can devastate your credit history and score, and the impact can be long-lasting. Patricia L. of Allen, Texas, who asked that her last name be withheld, found that her credit score plummeted more than 140 points after an electric bill for less than $100 went unpaid because it was sent to the wrong address. The bill went to collections, which she discovered when a credit monitoring service she used alerted her to the lower score. But then it was too late. Credit collections agency should notify you before an item gets put on your credit report, she says. Something similar happened to Robin Hennessy from CR's Consumer Panel. She says her exceptional score dropped 100 points after a single missed payment on a credit card. The mistake still haunts her report, even though it happened 3 years ago. Indeed, such payment snafus can stay on your report for 7 years, a period set in 1970 Fair Credit Reporting Act. But that is arbitrary, says Wu of the National Consumer Law Center. She said that Sweden and Germany keep negative reports on credit reports for 3 to 4 years. Doing the same in the U.S. could minimize the vicious cycle of aspect of low credit scores, she says. Improving your numbers. Pay off debts in collection as soon as possible. Collections debt is treated differently than late payments, and once it is paid, most credit scoring systems will include it in their calculations or weigh it as heavily, McCleary said. If you're negotiating with a debt collector, ask that the notice be removed from your report once the debt is paid. they may do so. There is no law that says the collection agency has to report it, he says. When mortgaging shopping, do it within a month. Each time a mortgage lender looks up your credit, a hard pull that hurts your score by a few points for a year or two, McCleary says. Credit bureaus usually consolidate similar hard pulls for mortgages, so a good rule of thumb is to do your comparison shopping within 30 days. Be careful when shopping for credit cards, too. Ironically, potential lenders don't want to see that you're shopping around for credit, McCleary says, because it looks like you've met financial trouble. For don't apply for a card unless you're sure you qualify and you're settled on a card you want. Avoid closing unused credit accounts. You may assume there's no reason not to cancel a card you never use, but doing so can drag down your score, McCleary says. It changes your debt-to-credit ratio. That's what happened to Terry Wilson, who lived in Pennsylvania, when a Capital One account he no longer used was closed by the bank. The loss of a $15,000 line of credit plunged my credit score, he says. Exception. It can make sense to close a card with a high annual fee if doing it will help you control your spending. Debts 30 days past due or more can devastate your credit history and score. And oh, I mentioned that. I'm sorry. Lenders use different scores depending on whether you seek a loan for a house, car, or credit card. Here are the common ones. General Credit type of score, FICO 8 and 9 Vantage score. Find it three through many banks, credit card issuers, and websites. Mortgage type of score, 2, 4, and 5. Find it free in mortgage documents started in 1995 at myfico.com. Auto loan type of score, FICO auto score, 2, 4, 5, and 8. Find it starting at 1995 at myfico.com. And credit card score, a type of score, FICO bank credit score, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 8. Find it starting at 1995 at myfico.com. And let's close out today with a couple of quotable quotes. The pandemic accentuated that part of me that says, why am I useful? Am I useful for anything? I'm only useful if I feel I can respond to need. Yo-Yo Ma, musician. There isn't a healthy body in the world stronger than a six-person spirit. Andrea Gibson, poet. I've loved quite a few people, and by that I mean I really feel happy in their company. That's pretty much it. The joy of someone's company. That's what I call love. Limiting a hot dog's significance by saying it's just a sandwich is like calling the Dalai Lama just a guy. Janet Riley. To reflect is one thing. To regret is another. Regret is useless. Idris Elba, actor. And with that, we've just about run out of time for today's episode of the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Be sure to listen in next time. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast on our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. I'm Jim Cronin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. So long until next time, and thanks so much for listening.